Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in 3 Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he bent me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard a pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. If it's Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose, and he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of me. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
As far as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz, with today, very special guest, former WWE superstar. You may know him as Mansoor, but of course, he was also known as Mansoir, one half of the Maximum Male Models. Mansoor, welcome to two-man power trip. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm feeling great.
What's going on in your world? I feel like you guys are busier than ever right now.
That is certainly true, and also a very low bar when it comes to busyness, especially the last few months. I mean, I haven't actually wrestled a match up until my first weekend on the Indies a couple weeks ago for about 6 months because we were off TV and off travel for about 3. And then when I got released, that's 90 days off. So that's 6 months of just not performing, not living my dream, not doing the thing that I dedicated my life to doing. So it took a tremendous mental toll, but I already feel so much happier, and you know, even my family can tell, just being able to do the thing that I love, it's been amazing. This is our 3rd weekend out. We just performed, we wrestled at DPW Deadlock Pro Wrestling against an awesome tag team called Miracle Generation. It was our tag team debut post WWE. We picked up a win. And fuck, am I allowed to swear? Is that cool?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go
fuck.
For it.
It just was so cool to do the thing that I've dreamed of doing and realizing that it doesn't really matter what stage it's on. As long as I'm fulfilled by the performance and the match itself, that's what's truly important. And of course, the money, feeding my kids.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah.
But that aside, it's been an amazing, amazing journey so far. And we're busy every single weekend up until May. So I actually may just be sick of it by that point, to be honest. We'll see.
And when you look at it, sometimes when you get released by WWE, oh, it's a bad thing, doom and gloom. Like, you know, you never hear from the guy again. Not you guys. It's almost the exact opposite. It's actually like a blessing in disguise that you guys got released.
Yeah, when I got let go, it was pretty tough on me. I was losing sleep. I was tossing and turning. I would stew on it, you know, because I felt like I worked so hard to prove that I could be an asset to the company. Even if I wasn't necessarily presented a certain way, I always felt that they knew I had the potential to step into that role whenever they felt I was ready to. You know, I would send vignettes and promos and ideas. And I'd write out, I have documents 10 pages long of weeks of storylines that I would pitch. Sadly, it didn't really work out that way. But the great thing about being on the independents is all that stuff you make for yourself. Like, I'm addicted to the grind right now of talking to promoters. Most people hate that, and I'm sure I will eventually. But talking to promoters and making dates, setting up meet and greets and signings and figuring out who I'm wrestling on what days. It's awesome because if I ever want to take a week off, it's up to me. It's not up to any company I'm working for. You know, WWE, they pay you a lot, but they pay you a lot under the condition that you can't work anywhere else. I get to be as busy as I want, or I get to be as free as I want. If I want to take a vacation, I can do that. I can go visit my family in Saudi Arabia, or I can get paid to go to Saudi Arabia and wrestle there and see my family. So, it's just tremendous. We wanted to prove to people, Mace and I, that it wasn't necessarily something that we wanted to be sitting on our couch at home. We've never been believers in just collecting a paycheck. We were trying that whole time to contribute something to the product so that we could entertain fans. And now we get the opportunity to put up or shut up and show just exactly what they were missing. And I think so far we're doing a great job.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. Do guys do that normally when they pitch so many ideas and they have all that ideas, or they just rely on the writers, or is that kind of different from you guys?
I think that a lot of people do pitch things 100%. We wanted to set ourselves apart by being as, what's the word?
Proactive.
Thank you. As possible. I remember we filmed two vignettes and they were both professionally shot, professionally produced promos where I rented a limo on my own dime on prom weekend. So it was really expensive. And we filmed a vignette that was based on Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. We had this sort of Tarantino-esque character that we wanted to do. We also filmed a vignette. We bought a green screen and we filmed a vignette that was kind of like a multi-level marketing scheme infomercial that was going to become this sort of Scientology-esque cult. And that was something that we actually flew to Stamford, Connecticut to pitch to the creative team directly. And they seemed like they really liked it. They had an idea where The Miz was going to be like our Tom Cruise and really buy in, and we turn his career around and we try to get as many people as possible into this sort of pseudo-science cult about self-help. We wanted to be more than just a text to a writer saying, here's my idea. How about I win the belt? Because that's kind of what a lot of people do. They say, I'd like to feud with the top guy of the company, win, and have the belt. But we always, in every pitch we ever did, we ended it with us putting somebody over because we wanted them to know that we were not really in this for ourselves. We were in this for making the product as good as possible because we understood that, you know, as tremendously athletic as professional wrestling is, when you're on a weekly serialized television show, you're part of a cast. And we wanted to basically show them that we were integral and could be assets as characters on that show. So sadly, it didn't work out. But who's to say what could happen and where we could work in the future? As long as we bring that philosophy, I think we'll be okay.
I love the Scientology idea. That's different, crazy.
Yeah,
different.
So to me, I always felt like it was weird that every cult in pro wrestling has been the same like sort of satanic hooded robes, Satana lo tiempo. Like it's always that kind of satanic from like the 70s and 60s when there was all that satanic panic about Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, how kids were meeting in their basements and drawing pentagrams. Like to me, the modern day cult is one centered around the fact that the new god is money. And basically, it's like there's this documentary my wife was watching about twin flames and how these people would convince people online that someone out there is their soulmate. And if they pay a fucking monthly fee, they'll help them find their soulmate. I mean, something as strange and esoteric as finding love. These people are coaching them and telling them to stalk these people because God is telling them that it's their soulmate. Just crazy shit that people buy into when they're desperate. So what I really wanted was something where we have I pitched that I would literally write a self-help book or a multi-disc. You know those like infomercials back in the day when you watched Comedy Central for too long? And it'd be like an hour long. Well, not that kind. Not fucking Girls Gone Wild. I'm talking about like a multi-disc DVD series of like, here's how you can turn your life around. That's the kind of stuff that we wanted to do. Actually, one of the ideas we had was I would be on a microphone, like a headset mic, as Mace would wrestle people, and I'd be giving these like self-help guide style point dialogue where he'd be fucking kicking someone's ass and the ref would back him away and I'd say, people in positions of authority are always going to try to hold you down. And stuff like that where I'm giving those points from the book to the audience as we're wrestling.
Oh, that's awesome. I liked it. That's such a good idea. And even with like the money thing or whatever, people, or even religion, like people don't want to kind of touch on it, but it is sometimes a scam, or you know, not saying all religion, but sometimes people use it as a scam to try to get money. So that'd be awesome to kind of bring that to light and be somewhat of a cult. That would have been actually a pretty cool idea, Scientology obviously included.
I appreciate that, thank you.
When you're pitching those ideas, is it all collaborative, or is it mostly you guys, or is it mostly creative? Like, as far as when you come together and actually go to Stanford and do it, is it like, okay, here, let's see your idea, or do they pitch in?
They pitched in when we had, like, actually gone there. You know, there was kind of a writer's room. It's actually, WWE is a lot like SNL, in a sense. It's just a room full of writers, and they're coming up with ideas, but ultimately everything has to go through one dude at the top, whether that was Vince or whether now it's Hunter. He's kind of the filter that kind of yays or nays every idea that they have. So we would come up with something on our own, and then when we would pitch it to creative, essentially they would shape it and mold it into something that they felt was doable, especially within the confines of, you know, what they know about plans regarding certain people, certain wrestlers. As far as, do they know what they're going to be doing for WrestleMania? Do they even know what they're going to be doing next week? So if we want to involve people, they would have a better understanding of who is free and who is not free.
So it's not like old school, you got a booker necessarily, not necessarily Triple H, just a booker in general. He's got the book and he's like, okay, you know, Seth Rollins, August is here, December is here. You know, it's not like that. It's more of a, basically sitting in a room and they're kind of checking off a box, almost like a, you know, going around the table kind of thing.
I can't so much as speak to the creative process now with Hunter definitively in charge and Vince not influencing anything at all. But as far as I understood it, when Vince was in charge, it was kind of like Vince would come into a room and say, damn it, Drew McIntyre needs to drive a truck over Braun Strowman's foot. And then the next week they'd put that in the script and Vince would look at it and go, why the hell is he driving a truck over Braun's foot? This is garbage. And he'd rip it up. So that certainly seemed to be an interesting creative process. As far as now, I honestly can't really tell you. It's tough with wrestling, booking long-term plans with injuries and things that you just can't really predict. I've seen cases where somebody commits too hard to a story and then has to backpedal tremendously when something goes wrong. But then at the same time, if you're booking week to week, nothing is getting paid off. Nothing is being rewarded, so to speak, as far as fans who are paying attention. So you kind of got to meet in the middle somewhere.
So, like, let's say you're booking the Scientology thing. They trust you enough to think like, hey, this is a good idea by you guys. Let's, you know, do your idea. Or is it them kind of taking your idea and spinning it?
In my experience, at least when we were doing the Maximum Male Models, and this one, when Vince was retired the first time. So right. Vince hadn't come back yet, right around the time of WrestleMania. It was just Hunter, and the story was that LA Knight was going to go away from being Max Dupri. And, every week, LA would find a reason to be mad at us, right? And they said, LA's going to get madder and madder about you guys modeling and not winning matches. So I sent a text the day before Raw or SmackDown where I said to my writer, and every wrestler is given a writer as sort of a liaison to the creative team. I said, hey, if you guys haven't come up with anything yet, here's our idea. We're going to be in Canada. We want LA Knight basically to say, boys, I got you a match with the Usos. This is a huge opportunity for you. And then we're going to be just standing perfectly still, not responding. And he goes, what the hell's going on? And Maxine would say, oh, the boys are trying to break the world, Canadian world record. We made it very important to say Canadian. The Canadian world record for longest pose. And Max would go, ah, God damn it, why, so on and so forth. And they loved it so much, the next day they said, okay, we're doing that. It's really as simple as that. As far as the creative process when Vince was involved, I'm not really sure. And now, I don't know if it's any different. But I think it depends. I think that we gained a lot of trust because we did a YouTube series, Making It Maximum, that every week we'd have writers come up to and say, you guys are writing all this yourselves? Like, you guys are making all this yourselves? Like, this is good stuff. And I think right after that ended, once we started going to work and doing backstage segments, the writers were kind of more open and accepting of our ideas. So definitely a rewarding process.
They saw it and were like, man, maybe we trust these guys. They're pretty creative. They're pretty smart. They can write their own stuff. We like
and
these
guys. I don't blame them for thinking otherwise because for the most part, wrestlers can be pretty dumb and very selfish. Like I said before, most pitches are, how about I win the belt?
So that YouTube, when you guys are doing that, that wasn't like necessarily WWE making you guys do that or telling you to do it. That's just you guys on your own doing that on your own.
Not at all. Like I said, we were always go-getters. We were never content just sitting around collecting a paycheck. I always felt like there were three times in my career where that was the case. It was during COVID, where I wasn't doing anything. It was right after the Mustafa Ali feud, where I wasn't doing anything. And then when Vince was gone and we put over LA and he transitioned into that character, we weren't doing anything. So that third time I was like, all right, we just got to do something on our own to stay on people's radars. And also prove that we could be an asset to the company. So right around that time where we weren't getting on TV as the models, I said, fuck it. Let's just do like a keeping up with the Kardashians-esque reality TV show. We try to make it as funny as possible. Hopefully they'll put it on TV if they like it enough. Or at the minimum, at least bring us back because they know that we're funny. And luckily that happened ultimately when I actually remember my daughter was born. The day my daughter was born, that night, my wife's holding her in her arms, and I get a call from a writer, and he says, we need you at Raw in 2 days. And I had it on speaker, and I looked at my wife, and I said, I just, like, shrugged my shoulders, and she just smiled and nodded. And that's how I knew I had the best wife in the world, because she understood that opportunities like this don't come every day. For me to be able to sort of start a new storyline, as the models especially, when we thought that gimmick was dead in the water, was great. And I only wish that we could have actually paid off that story, but circumstances got in the way.
Right. Man, what an understanding wife. Damn.
She's the best. Like when I met her in college, all I ever talked about was pro wrestling. Every shirt I ever wore to class was pro wrestling related. Pro wrestling was my life. So she knew from day one, 8 years ago when we started dating, that this was my dream. There was never any problems there. She's tremendously understanding. I have a deep appreciation for her.
You're lucky. My wife would be like, get out of here. You're watching the baby in 2 days. You're not going to wrestle.
Oh, no, believe me. I owed her big time. I paid my dues, so to speak, as a father.
Good, good. As far as Maximale Waddles, I wanted to get into that just because where did that actually start? How did that actually come together? Because I know I just talked to Mace and he was doing the Retribution thing and then he was with T-Bar and that kind of just faltered and fell out by the wayside. So how did the Maximale Waddles even come around even to start to begin with?
So I was told that the Maximale Waddles was Vince's baby. It was apparently an idea that he had that he was pushing for. For approximately a year, he'd be in writer's room saying, damn it, we need to get some male models on the show. I want to see some runway segments, some fashion segments. I want to see glutes glistening under the lights. And they kind of just kept putting it off until finally he was like, no, damn it, we're getting the models on. So Mace and I were two guys on SmackDown that were doing absolutely nothing and completely coincidentally put together. Mace and I have been best friends since the day I stepped into the PC. But Vince and co had no idea that we were that close, that we had a tremendous amount of chemistry. So it all worked out. I remember I walked into Vince's office with a pitch. I had an iPad with a video. It was sort of like a prototype version of the Scientology gimmick where it was like the self-help guy. And I remember saying, hey, Mr. McMahon, because I would go into his office. I would try to go into his office almost every week because I was so desperate to try and get something going. I said, Vince, I got a new pitch for you. And he said, put that shit away. And I was like, okay. So I put it away and he was like, I got an idea for you. You're going to be a male model. You and Mace, you're a couple of good looking guys. I think you can do it. And I remember being like, oh shit, that sounds awesome. Because for me, like my character in WWE for like 3 years up until that point, I had just kind of been the Saudi guy, which I was tremendously proud to represent my country. And I had these awesome moments in Saudi Arabia, like wrestling Claudio Castagnoli, Nick Nemeth, Mustafa Ali, winning the biggest battle royal, of all time. That was super cool. But at the same time, there was sort of a glass ceiling because I was only getting booked for those shows. And otherwise, there was no real story we could tell in the United States. And that was always my goal. I wanted to be a star worldwide. I wanted to be wrestling every single week. But as this sort of blue chipper who just kind of represented his country, I think it was very limiting. I only really got to shine two times out of the year. So here was an opportunity for me to get a character that's very outside the box. And, you know, people would say that it was a curse, but I would think it's a gift. Because if I can take this gimmick that everybody thinks is just dog shit and I can turn it into something entertaining, it'll speak tremendously to my talent and ability as not just a professional wrestler, but as a performer in general, as a character on a television show. So, yeah, when people say, hey, that's going to kill your career, they were half right. But at the same time, when I got released, I had more people reach out to me in the industry from other companies and WWE saying, hey, I saw the work you guys did with the Maximum Male Models. Like, that's the kind of work that I would like in this company. And they would give me numbers and references to people from all over, not just the United States, but the world, as far as getting booked on the indies and perhaps even reaching out to some other bigger companies as well. So I chalk it up as a win.
It's one of those Dusty Rhodes polka dot things to me, because it's like, okay, we'll give you this gimmick. It's not good. But if you are into it and make it good and make it your own, everybody remembers it because, wow, that person really like got into that gimmick. And you can't take that away from it. And it just becomes like a snowball effect. It's like, wow, they got so into it. And then now you remember Dusty as a polka dot. Me anyway, like, that was awesome. Oh, what a, you know, he really turned that. Even you guys, like, man, they got so into it. Like, I at first I hated the gimmick. And then I fell in love with it because I'm like, they're hilarious that they just feed into this gimmick even more than you would normally think you would.
I really appreciate that. Yeah, that's kind of the goal, I think, was to show people that we're having fun with it and you should be having fun watching it. Because I think when you see people enjoying themselves on TV, I think it speaks to them on a fundamental level when you're watching. You can kind of feel that they're having fun. The most important thing for us was that people knew we were not poo-pooing on this idea, that we were taking it, we were being good soldiers, and we were making the most of it. And I think like that YouTube show, if anybody watching goes back, look up Making It Maximum, that's sort of the unfiltered comedy that we were going for on TV. I'll never forget doing that segment where we filmed the video of what's it like to be a Maximum Male Model backstage at SmackDown. And we filmed this part of the video where we were with Adam Pearce, and we found out we weren't booked. We weren't on the show. And we were like, all right, Pierce, I think we all know what we need to be doing here. What is it going to take to get the Maximum Male Models a match on the show? And Pierce is like, sorry, boys, I just don't have a spot for you. And I pull out a crisp fiver. And I say, yeah, I think you're going to have a little chat with my friend Abraham Lincoln here. And then as we walk away, Mace goes, I didn't know that you were friends with Abraham Lincoln. That's just the kind of shit we wanted to do. It was just to pop people at home. And we had like five matches on TV. Just five. But people remember the Maximum Male Models. We do meet and greets and we do signings at all these shows we're going to. And more people, more often than not, come to us and say, we love the Maximum Male Models. So, yeah, I had a blast.
I feel like it's all about like the character, especially in WWE. People love the character. They get engrossed in the character. And if the guys playing the character are super into it, people just remember it and revere it because, like, man, they're so into it. It just, you just become engrossing to them. It's great.
Yeah, and God, I really, it's such a what if because there was political factors that kind of got in the way that were out of our control. You know, certain high-ranking people were kind of scared about the gimmick, and the relationship with Saudi Arabia and how I was being presented. And I kind of feel bad because I feel kind of like Mace was caught in the crossfire of that, so to speak. I also wonder if maybe, you know, Hunter saw Pretty Deadly and he saw us and he said, well, here's my new act and it's kind of similar. So let's kind of let these guys go. A lot of factors could have been involved, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm 28 years old and there's a lot I can do still in this industry. So I try not to hang up on that kind of stuff. And I did for a while after getting released. But now that I'm finally working and I'm not hung up on what was and what could have been, I'm tremendously optimistic.
So it's maybe Saudi Arabia didn't want you playing that gimmick, so to speak. They didn't want you to be the male model.
So it was weird because when I found out I was going to be a male model, in the same conversation, Vince basically said to me, hey, the reason why you're not on this next Saudi show is because I was told that I'm dropping the Vince impression because to save my throat. The reason why you're not on the next Saudi show is because the Saudis basically said, listen, Mansoor's cool and all, but what we want is like Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, Goldberg, Roman Reigns. OK, we want the big stars. So he was like, what we're going to do is we're going to give you a character. And hopefully it'll make you a big star and then you can get back on the show. And I was like, oh, that's great. But I was more concerned with, you know, week to week being as important to the company as possible. So it was my understanding that I was not necessarily a priority for Saudi Arabia. And I kind of, I would understand at least a little bit that was true. It kind of affirmed that when I found out that there were no plans for another Saudi tryout. I mean, all the Saudi talent that they signed for my tryout have been released. So if it was important to have that kind of representation, then I feel like at least one of us would still be there. So I think that tracks. But then when Vince sort of came back from his retirement, we were kind of getting messages from the creative team that was like, hey, we wanted to put you in this backstage segment, but somebody's a little concerned that the portrayal of the character may offend certain important partners to the company. So I was kind of reading between the lines. And I remember actually when Vince gave us the character, he really emphasized, he said, listen, it's not a gay thing, all right? You're metrosexual. So I was like, oh, okay. So I wonder maybe if when he came back, he felt that our portrayal was a little too flamboyant and kind of got spooked. I don't know. And I try not to worry about it.
Interesting, though. That's such like a weird twist on it because you guys
were... know.
Like hitting home runs with what you were giving, you know what I mean? That's just like a crazy twist.
It reminds me of like when I was in NXT, I had the match with Cesaro, and right after that match, I was in the house shows for NXT, and I realized after a few weeks, like, hey, I'm not losing anymore. What's going on? And then I was like, well, why aren't I being used on NXT TV? Like, I just had this great match with Cesaro. I proved that I could go. I can keep up with these guys. I had people in the office vouching for me. And then I found out after a couple months, hey, Vince told us you're not allowed to lose, like, at all. Like, you're not even allowed to get pinned or I'm sorry, you're not even allowed to lose in a triple threat or a tag team match where you don't get pinned. You're not allowed to do anything but win. And we can't just have you on the show without knowing if we can beat you or not. So that's another instance where there have been times in my career where I got my job in WWE because I'm Saudi and I grew up there and I was raised there. At the same time, though, it put a ceiling on me. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword because, of course, I'm incredibly proud to go to Saudi Arabia and wrestle for my family, my dad, who didn't understand pro wrestling until he sat in the front row of Crown Jewel and watched me wrestle Cesaro. And I saw a video of him standing on his feet and cheering like he was a fan like for life. But at the same time, it kind of limited my ability in the sense that I was never being judged as just Mansoor, the talent. I was being judged as Mansoor in relationship to their multi-billion dollar deal with a foreign country. So it is what it is.
A little bit of pressure there, no?
There was until there wasn't. You know what I mean? Like I felt like the world was on my shoulders until I realized, listen, I'm the only Saudi representation this company has. There are millions of people who look at me as the guy for them. I can't possibly live up to their standards, so I'm just going to do the best I can and not compromise who I am as a human being.
Makes sense. With that, did they ever really like sit you down and explain it to you? Like, hey, this is why we don't want you to lose, or this is what's going on here. Did they ever explain that to you?
Well, the creative team basically said Vince doesn't want you to lose because he doesn't want to anger their Saudi partners. So I actually went up to Vince, and this was at Super Showdown when I wrestled Dolph. And I said, hey, Vince, So I'm not being used in NXT because they said that you told them I'm not allowed to lose. Can I lose? And he said, nah, don't worry about it. We're going to call you up. And I was like, great. That sounds great. Of course, a few months later, I was not called up. Pandemic hits. They start doing shows at the PC. I'm in the crowd. I'm one of the plants. I go to Vince's office. I say, hey, Mr. McMahon, I'm not on NXT because I'm not allowed to lose. Is there any chance I can start losing? He says, nah, don't worry about it. We're going to call you up. A few months later, I am not called up.
Damn it.
But eventually, I did get called up. I got a text saying I was needed for the Thunderdome, I think they called it, in Tampa. Yep. I did main event for a while, and once they kind of deemed me ready, that's when I got called up. And of course, after like 80 straight wins, what did I do in my debut? Lost by DQ. Very underwhelming. Fans were pissed.
Why is that? What's up with that? That because doesn't really make sense.
It's not. It was never something that was supposed to be this big undefeated streak. It was just a byproduct of Mansoor can't lose, damn it. And then I got called up, and Vince was like, "Nah, whatever, he can lose." That's the way Vince was. It was always something different week to week.
So it's not like Goldberg's winning streak here, where he's not supposed to lose for a while.
No, not at all. Because if it well, actually, we kind of had similar satisfaction, like. The level of payoffs for both our winning streaks, I think, was a similar level of satisfactory. We both had very underwhelming endings to our undefeated streak.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's just weird. Like, it's like everything comes down to, like, Vince and, you know, maybe it's something crazy that he might say or might do, and they kind of have to react to it. Dude, but it doesn't really have to make any sort of sense whatsoever. And it doesn't make sense.
I won't say who this was, but there was a wrestler who Vince adored, right? And then one week, they're taping Tribute to the Troops. And the head of TR at the time was like, guys, I know everybody needs to get to the next town for the house show. You're free to leave early, but you just have to check with me. So this wrestler that I know texts TR and says, am I allowed to leave early? And they say yes. But what does he decide to do? He decides to stay and watch half the show. He watches guys walk past. They're all leaving. Half the locker room, three quarters of the locker room are gone. He says, all right, I guess I'll head out. As he's leaving, who does he pass? Vince McMahon. Vince goes, you're leaving? He says, yes, sir. He goes, huh. Walks away. As this wrestler is driving to the next town, he gets a call from TR saying, hey, Vince says you need to come back right now. He goes, what? What do you mean? You told us we were allowed to leave. Nope, gotta come back. Guy comes back. He's been booked at a match where he's going to lose. And that was the end of his push. I was like, I cannot believe your entire career can be changed at the whims of this guy. Like, it's insane. Just based on things completely out of your control. That's what I always try to tell people. Like, it's the circumstances of a person's career are not based on their talent. It's based on timing, and it's based on luck. And the best thing you can possibly do is be as good as you can be, as in good shape and as ready as you can be for when you're lucky enough to get an opportunity like that. That's all I can really say.
It's just crazy because I remember years ago when Daniel Bryan was getting a push, but if you really paid attention, he really wasn't getting a push at all. They made him Daniel Wyatt. Remember, they put him in the Wyatt family.
Like, okay, but to be fair, the payoff to that was awesome. Yes. That steel cage match ruled.
Yes, and the crowd was awesome. But like I always
was it on purpose? I don't.
That's what I was hearing. That's what I was going to get to. Not on purpose, but the crowd made it awesome. The crowd made it whatever because he was like, "Ah, oh, we're pushing Bray. We're going to get rid of this guy. We're going to have Orton beat him eventually." Like he was just going to move him out of the way, and then he kept getting pushed. So it's like sometimes what Vince wants doesn't actually jive and make sense to what the crowd wants.
It's so funny because like as a fan at the time, and I was at the peak of my fandom in 2013 when Daniel Bryan had that rise. And then main eventing WrestleMania 30. That was like, to me, that was like the light bulb moment where I was like, I want to be a pro wrestler. I was such a huge Danielson fan. My sisters, too. All three of us were watching WrestleMania together just in our living rooms, just going crazy. And at the time, I completely agreed with you. I was like, God, they're burying this guy. They're not using him right. As a wrestler, though, I look at a guy who in his second year on the main roster won the World Heavyweight Championship and was having a United States Championship, Tag Team Championships. I mean, I would have killed for that run. Of course, the talent ratio is completely different. And for how good he was, did he deserve more at the time? I don't know. That's not for me to say. But I think about two of some of my favorite wrestlers of all time, CM Punk and Bryan Danielson. And I think about how angry I was as a fan that these multiple-time world champions were not being used right. And then as a wrestler, as somebody who struggled and dreamed of getting on pay-per-view outside of Saudi Arabia, it is kind of like weird to hear people when they say, oh, they were buried, oh, they weren't used right. Because these guys are on every pay-per-view, multiple-time champions, working with guys like Undertaker at WrestleMania. But I see what you mean. As a worker, though, it totally changed my perspective.
And I was at a house show around that time when he was doing the Daniel Wyatt thing. And you're like, wow, this is crazy. The crowd was like nuts. They wanted him to turn on Bray.
Yeah.
Like the whole time. I mean, it was just like fever pitch. I was like, I wonder if Vince cares. Does he pay attention to this? I mean, obviously he was smart enough to turn him back. But, it's one of those things where you're like, I don't know if he's getting the pulse.
Another question is, does it matter? Like, does it matter if what was intended isn't what ultimately happens as long as it's great? Yep. I don't know. I can't really answer that question.
Yeah, that's true. It's one of those things where, well, the end result was great anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Like some people talk about how Vince wanted to make Austin Chili McFreeze, right? But he didn't, so he ended up becoming the biggest star of all time. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yep. Yeah, you always kind of wonder some of those things. Like, you see some of those drawings that they have for some of the guys. Like, this is I could have been, and it doesn't happen.
We got too. We got some concept art for the Maximum Male models, yes.
Did it actually look like what you guys were going to dress like on TV or completely different?
It did. Well, there were multiple ideas, and the ones that we ultimately went with was like the mesh shirt and the shorts. And there was also Maximum Male model gear that Max Dupree was supposed to wear, but of course he never did because we never got that far. But we looked like a very zesty Shield. Like it was like a trio of very flamboyant gear.
That's so funny because they showed the Kane one and it looks awesome. He looks like, superhero. The Undertaker one looks awesome. And then you see the Mankind, we're like, what the hell is that? It's like the Hunchback and Undertaker. It's so weird. Like sometimes they nail it, sometimes they don't.
My favorite one is the FTR revival where they had like the giant clock, like Flava Flav. What the fuck is that?
Yeah. Oh my God. That was horrible. These two guys from North Carolina are like dressed like what the hell? Like they should be like the Four Horsemen, not like, you know what I mean? Like Arn and Tully, not like whatever the hell that was.
Who knows, man? I don't know. That company is so funny. The thing is they pay you so fucking much. I'll do anything they say. I had my match with Cesaro. And I remember living in an apartment in NXT, and my wife got a check in the mail, and she just looked at me with her eyes like this. And I was like, what? And she was like, your check from Saudi came. And we made a down payment for a house with that money. And then the match with Dolph was like double that. Like, these guys make a lot of fucking money. And you know, obviously there's concerns about healthcare and benefits. But as far as compensation goes, like, we were very well taken care of. So it's kind of, I always feel weird about complaining about creative when, you know, we were compensated so well. Like, there's a roof. My mortgage is paid off. Obviously, you can't see because there's a fucking brick wall, green screen behind me because I'm ashamed of how dirty and messy my office is. But my house is paid off, and there's a roof over my daughter's head because of my time in WWE. So I'll never say anything, like, fundamentally bad about them. Just about, you know, how crazy it is working there as far as creative goes.
Yeah, not too bad to get that check in the mail or the
not
couple
at
of checks
all.
In the mail.
Not at all. They basically pay you a fuck ton of money to not have fun wrestling, which is crazy because it's fucking pro wrestling. Like, how could you not have fun? But they find a way.
Right. Damn. Yeah. And with those Saudi checks, were you? I mean, you're a wrestler before Saudi, right? And you come to the tryout, you're ready to train wrestler. So it's not one of those things where you're necessarily like this rookie from Saudi Arabia that came out of nowhere, right? So, I mean, you're already kind of established a little bit as far as being a pro wrestler.
So as far as being a rookie who had never had a match before, that's what they thought I was. When I had my match with Cesaro, Vince was adamant, and he was actually like really intense about it to my producer at the time, Sugar Shane Helms, the Hurricane. Hurricane was like, yeah, Vince wanted me to bring you and Claudio to the practice ring the day before the show and all day rehearse the match. And I said to Vince, I was like, Vince, this kid's wrestled for like years. Like, he knows how to wrestle. They had no clue. They thought I was like a local that they just pulled in and I was going to have my first match. That night was crazy because like they told Hurricane, this has to be a WrestleMania level match. It has to steal the show. So there was a lot of pressure on us. And I remember kind of liking it. I was like, ooh. Look who's the belle of the ball. Like, look who has to fucking steal the show. And, of course, I couldn't have had a better partner to do that with Claudio, one of the best wrestlers in the world. Still to this day, I credit him doing a tremendous favor to me, basically making the match of my career. So yeah, that was a very interesting experience.
When you're in Saudi Arabia, right, and that match happens, are you super over automatically because you're from Saudi Arabia, or does the match get you over because you had a great match?
So it's very interesting because, like, in the Battle Royal, I think I was super over because I was perceived as a local. And I didn't even have an entrance. So when I ended up in the match and people realized I was in the final five, I think everybody was like, oh my God, wait, is that the kid from fucking the last Saudi show from the tryouts? Holy shit, it is. And then as I got closer, final two with Elias, now Elijah, people were like, oh my, is he actually going to do it? Is he actually going to do it? And then with Cesaro, with Claudio, it was the first singles match. So everybody was like, oh, he's definitely going to win. But the way we structured the match with all these false finishes, we really wanted to make people question, holy shit, is he going to lose? Like, are we going to see a riot? Like, are people going to throw trash in the ring? So that had an amazing crowd. But then when I had the match with Dolph, I remember the crowd being way, like, less involved and invested. And I think it's because we didn't like, heighten the stakes. It was just another singles match with no build. The match with Cesaro-Claudio was allowed to have no build because it was my first match on pay-per-view, and people had never seen me actually wrestle before. But with Dolph, it was just kind of a rehash of the Cesaro match. And then with Ali, there actually was a story going into that we had built for months on Raw. So people were invested because of that. So I don't think I automatically was over because of where I came from. I think that at a certain point, they did expect more from the company to invest in me. But I think we did that with the fourth match.
So when you get picked, is it handpicked from the Saudi government, or is this strictly WWE picking you because you were the most talented guy? You know what I mean? Like, you're not like a guy, they're like, oh, we want this guy.
So the tryout, all the people involved in the tryout, I believe it was something like 30 guys, they were all picked by the Saudi Sports Authority, who at the time was in partnership with WWE. But as far as who was selected amongst the talent at the tryout, that was all WWE. So from 30, we went down to 8 finalists and then to 4. And yeah, and then in the pandemic, they let go of 2, and 1 never even signed because he wasn't interested. So, yeah, I mean, I was the last one for a while. And it was kind of strange because I was the only person there who had pro wrestling experience. Everybody else was an MMA fighter or a gymnast or like a football player, like soccer, or even in the military. So I definitely had a leg up. But at the same time, these guys were fucking huge and jacked. And I was smaller than I am now. I'm like 204, 205 pounds right now. Back then, I was like 170, 175. So I was like, fuck, I'm not going to get signed. I'm tiny. But I treated it like the one and only tryout I was ever going to get. And I worked my ass off. And while guys were rolling out of the ring to throw up or complaining about how hard bumps hurt or giving up, I was there fucking doing every drill, getting up the fastest, hitting the ropes the fastest, doing my best. So, yeah, I think it paid off.
Now, I know everybody always says Saudi Arabia is a little controversial going there. And, you know, they kind of – sometimes people make us think about it, but it's becoming very westernized. Seems like, everyone who's popular, right, they go over there and they concert, sporting events, golf. I mean, it's becoming super popular for the West, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they have a tremendous amount of money, so they can afford anybody to come over.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because when I grew up there, it's such a tremendously different environment from the way, like, I don't know if you know this, but it's only recently that people were allowed to go watch movies. Like, when I grew up, there were no movie theaters. You couldn't go out and watch a movie. You had to buy cam rips of movies, like, from a store, like the ones that people sell in the streets of New York City. Because people believed that movie theaters were like dens of sin. I remember when I was a kid, I knew an older guy who was taken to the back of a van and caned, like hit, whipped essentially, because he had taken a girl out on a date. And there used to be religious police called Motowa. And basically they'd stop you and they'd ask for ID. And if you're with a girl and you weren't related, yeah, you were getting your ass kicked. Just completely, women weren't allowed to drive. I remember like my mom having to carry me in rain to the pharmacy to get medicine when my dad was at work. Just like really, it's so much better now. And I go back every single time and I see, you know, I moved when I was like 11 with my sisters and my mom, and they were so young that they don't even know how different it was. But I see my nieces who I knew since they were babies now as young women, and they're going to school and they're getting work, and women like live alone. Like, I know to an American, this is like, oh, of course they would. But as somebody who grew up in this ultra traditional conservative religious society, like, it's mind blowing to me, and I'm incredibly happy about it.
Crazy, some of that stuff. Yeah, we just take it for granted over here. It's
of
crazy.
Course, and I don't blame you. I mean, it should be a given, but it's not, and it's baby steps. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. Now that obviously, then with that comes to the, oh my God, they stopped a plane over there, and the WB got yeah. trapped on the plane.
Yeah,
like
that's right.
People always bring that up. Is that true at all, or is that just completely made up? There's not really like the Saudi government stopped the plane. And
well, okay, so the thing that people said at the time was that we were being kept hostage. That's definitely not true, because I know people who were on that plane who just got up and left and took a different flight home.
And then, oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, they just took a different flight home. The plane was stopped. I think this what they said was that it was a mechanical failure. I truly have no clue. All I know is that I know that there was some sort of issue between WWE and the Saudi department that they were partnered with, as far as like showing the show on television. I think that was the same show I wrestled Cesaro. And I wonder maybe if like the importance that was placed on my match had something to do with like the Saudi kid needs to have a great match so we can fix this shit. I truly don't know what happened, and I know it's a matter of legal dispute, so I won't comment on it like extensively, because I don't want to be pulled into fucking court. So all I say for now is I really have no clue.
Yeah, it's one of those things where Vince left, and the other players.
Well, yeah, well no, he fucking left. Yeah, he could have been with the boys and fucking showed solidarity. But all I know is that we got kept, and I just went to my dad's house and played No Mercy with my brother, so it didn't really matter to me.
Nice, So no hostage situation. You're playing.
No, hostage. But I mean, for the people, for all the other wrestlers on the plane, I felt horrible for them, because they want to get home and see their families. Yeah. Like, of course, and their families were worried sick. I absolutely understand it.
And is it also true you stole Shane McMahon's locker room? Is that story also?
I took a shit in his locker room, but I didn't know it was his locker room. I swear to God, I didn't know. I did it, and I even fucked up. Like, did you? It's fucking public news anyway. I went to the TNA taping with Mace.
Oh yeah,
on Friday here in Orlando, and you're the first person to hear this, by the way. So enjoy your scoop. I fucked up again. Another bathroom related incident. There's like pipe and drape, and it's. I was like, "Where's the bathroom? I really need to go." And somebody directs me down this hallway. It's a long, dark hallway. It's very dark. I can barely see, and I see this big room. And I'm like, is that the bathroom? And to the left of the bathroom, there's a sign, and it says electrical closet. I'm like, oh, I guess that's the electrical closet. So I walk past it. I see another big opening to a room. And there, I'm like, this must be the bathroom. I don't see a sign, but it must be the bathroom. So I walk inside, and there's just like a bunch of stalls. I'm like, oh, I guess it's like one of those, you know, people do gender neutral bathrooms now where it's just stalls and then people wash their hands. Okay, fine. I bomb that shit. I take a tremendous steaming hot dump. Walk out, as I'm washing my hands, I shit you not. I'm not going to say who it was, but a woman who works for TNA walks in and goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I say, no, don't worry. It's one of those gender neutral bathrooms. She goes, really? I say, yeah. She walks out, comes back in and says, no, this is the woman's restroom.
Oh, damn.
I go, oh no. I had no clue. I'm so sorry. I run out. I look. I guess my eyesight shit. I look at the sign. It says, sure as shit, women's restroom. I run over to what I thought was the electrical closet. Sure as shit, sign next to it, men's bathroom. The electrical closet was a fucking door in the middle that I just didn't see. So I'm just a fucking moron, okay? And when I went to the back, I told Mace what happened, and he was like, I literally can't leave you alone for one goddamn second.
What is up with you in bathroom situations?
I'm just an idiot. I'm a stupid, dumb child. I can't be left alone. I can't be trusted.
You have bad eyesight as well. Yeah, that's
I do have bad eyesight. It's because I don't eat carrots.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. With like the Saudi Arabia stuff with Shane McMahon, any sort of heat there or not?
No, because that happened, and then I won the biggest battle royal, and I came to the back, and Shane was there, and he said, "Hey, kid, that was a great promo." I said, "Oh, thank you so much, sir. That means a lot coming from you." And that's actually when I went back to that bathroom and found out from a sign that was fuck me and signs, right? Like, what? Why am I not reading these goddamn signs? It said Shane McMahon's private locker room. So, yeah, no heat with Shane. Like, Shane's cool.
Any heat with the person at TNA?
God, I hope not. I really fucking hope not. I really hope that she understood that it was an honest mistake and that I'm just I have one brain cell and I share it with Mace. So, I really, fingers crossed.
I'd be scared to wrestle you if you can't see. You know what I mean? Like,
That's a great point. I don't know. I might just fucking drop you on your head.
When you're doing like the Maximum Male, just go back to Maximum Male Moms. I love this gimmick. When you're doing that gimmick and Max Dupree is with you, is he literally destined to be like your full-time manager? Like, that's what Vince wanted? He wasn't going to be a wrestler? Like, this ripped guy who's been a wrestler for, you know, 20 years, he was supposed to be like your manager legitimately? Or is this be part of the feud?
They were on an age kick at the time. This was like a big Johnny Ace thing. He really wanted more younger guys. So Vince saw LA in a dark match and was like, who's that? Oh, because, you know, he's jacked.
Yeah.
And Johnny Ace was like, oh, that's LA Knight. And Vince was like, oh, call him up. And Johnny's like, well, he's blah, blah, blah. He's so-and-so age. And I guess they felt it was old. So they were like, well, let's make him a manager. Fucking bonehead. It's not about how old you are. It's about how old you feel. And he certainly does not feel old. He can fucking go. That's for damn sure. Yeah. And, you know, they told him, yeah, you're just going to be a manager. But I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second. Like, I know it just came out. I did it in another interview. I said that the original intention for Butch, Pete Dunne, was that he was never going to wrestle a match. That's what apparently Vince said to Creative. I don't want him to wrestle. I just want him to be this scrappy little gremlin. But, of course, he did end up wrestling a match, and that was under Vince. So I when they said that Max Dupree was just going to be a manager and never wrestle, I just chalked that up to being one of those things that was going to change. Because I even said to LA, I was like, dude, you're going to wrestle because you're going to talk. And because you talk, you're going to get over. And then they're going to book you in a match. Like, it's as simple as that. So no matter what the intention was, kind of like with our conversation earlier, I don't think ultimately it was going to result that way.
Right. Yeah, it's just funny thinking like, wow, this guy's like ripped. You know, he looks like, you know, 230 pounds. He's like ripped. Like, he's a manager? Like, what are they doing? Like, yeah.
No clue.
Very, very strange. But I guess, you know, that's just the way it is. It almost seemed like he, not that he wasn't into the character, but you guys really delved into it. He got into it, but I don't know. It just didn't mesh with him. It didn't fit with him, I don't think.
With LA, I think it's a case of, you know, Mace and I, we're not even 10 years into wrestling. We're close, but we're not there yet. And LA has been doing this for almost, I think, 2 decades. And he's perfected and honed this character, whether it's Eli Drake or LA Knight. Like, this is the man that was, you know, TNA World Heavyweight Champion. This is the man who got over in NXT, cutting these awesome promos. To make a complete 180 in that character after portraying it for so long, yeah, I don't blame it at all for it to be hard, especially when you consider the fact that Vince had a very specific idea for what this character was supposed to be. He wanted it to be a weaselly, sniveling little, like, manager geek. But look at LA Knight. He's fucking got giant pecs. He's a giant triceps. He's huge. He's a Chad. He's a total confident. He's got charisma. So I think it was just miscast. I don't think it was anybody's fault. I just think that he wasn't the right person for that role. Like, I saw somebody on the internet say that Robert Stone should have been Max Dupree. I think that would have been perfect. Fucking Robbie E from TNA. Like, now he's doing his managing thing. I think he would have fit that character perfectly.
Makes perfect sense, because not that Robbie E's small, but he's smaller than LA Knight. I mean, LA Knight is pretty big. So right. It kind of would...
No, Robbie's shredded. Robbie's fucking shredded.
Oh, yeah.
Legit, yeah.
Hey, but
he's not fucking LA Knight. Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, you know him.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a super nice guy, but he's ripped. He's shredded for sure, but he's just not as big as LA Knight.
In a suit, you wouldn't know.
Right, right. I love, though, Maxine Dupree with you guys, because it's like, oh, my God, who the hell is this hot chick? Why is she hanging out with these guys? That kind of thing.
Whoa. What do you mean, why is she hanging out with us guys? What's that supposed to imply?
Oh, you guys are acting like super flamboyant. It's like, wait, what is she doing? You know what I mean?
I see. Yeah. Well, it's so funny, because that was part of what we wanted. We wanted the heat to be for. Like, we were so upset. For like a long, long time, Maxine was not under a main roster contract. Because she was called up by Johnny Ace and Vince. And her first day was the day Vince retired and Triple H took over. And Johnny was gone. Her first fucking day. Like, so I don't think they knew if they were going to keep her as called up or not. I think they had her on like a trial run. And I was like upset, because here's this woman who is brand new to the business, being thrust into the spotlight, and she's working her ass off. Like, the whole making it Maximum thing, I think, was really important to do, because it made her sort of solidify what Maxine Dupree as a character was. And I remember we'd go to the PC, and we'd give her a microphone and coach her with her promos. And we'd do shit like, we'd shout at her, like, get the fuck off the stage, fuck off, like, get out the ring. We would try to make her used to the kind of shit that people were shouting at us when we were cutting our promos on house shows. We really wanted her to come along for those house show loops. And I think she actually just started with Alpha Academy, which is great, doing those house shows. But yeah, it was tough. But you know, her being brand new to the business, I'm so happy that we would travel together, we'd drive together, we'd fly together. So I enjoyed it because I love teaching. Like whenever I get to do a seminar and teach kids about wrestling, like that's when I kind of feel the most fulfilled in this job. So whenever I got to impart any advice on her, it was always really nice. And we still keep in touch. She's awesome. Yeah, Maxine did a great job.
So much more meat on the bone with Alpha Academy, with her in the middle versus the models, right?
Yeah.
Which could have been.
We pitched the storyline where Otis fell in love with Maxine, and then she sort of seduced him into joining Maximum Male Models. But Otis said that he would do it only on the condition if Chad was able to join, and we'd treat Otis great, but we'd treat Chad like shit. Eventually, Chad would say, "Come on, Otis, we're leaving." And Otis would say, "No, nah, I'm staying." That would create a rift. Chad could go on to do a singles run, feuding with Gunther, Intercontinental Championship, King of the Ring, whatever he liked, while Otis was with us. And then eventually, we fucking embarrass Otis. We humiliate him. We wanted him to have like a graduation. We were going to have him go to MIT, model in training. And once it was time for him to graduate, he would come out and do his first real fashion show on the runway. And we were going to dump pig shit on him or whatever the fuck and just humiliate him Carrie style, like the movie Carrie.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was going to become depressed and dejected. And we would taunt him and kick his ass. And then Chad would make the save. And we'd do this big feud with Alpha Academy. But sadly, circumstances happened the way they did, beyond our control, and we didn't get to do that. Although we did get some fucking kick-ass house show matches with Alpha Academy. We did a European tour, we worked with them, and it was tremendous. But sadly, people will, I won't say never, but people didn't get to see it on TV.
And you guys should have feuded with Pretty Deadly, too. It would have been models versus models.
Oh, my fucking God, dude. Money left on the table, 100%. I told them when they said, "Hey, we're killing the models gimmick, we're going to repackage you guys." I said, "Please, before we do that, can we do some kind of fucking loser, never models again match with Pretty Deadly? Like, right. Can we do something to put those guys over? Because how are we not doing Pretty Deadly versus Maximum Male Models?" But it was out of our hands.
Oh, man, that would have been awesome. And I know Mace was saying to me the other day, he had a great idea. You had to put clothes on, and it would be horrible clothes. And you guys would never want to, so you'd be so depressed, you'd want to quit the business.
It's a reverse bra and panties match
where you
put like cargo shorts, a fedora, a flame shirt. And once you're photographed as wearing these horrible clothes, you'll quit modeling forever. Yeah. That was
right.
Of course,
you can never be a model again.
Vince might have gone for that. Hunter, probably not.
Right. Still, though, hilarious, though. That's funny. Yeah. That's a good stuff. But as we hit the wind down here, we'll head towards the finish. What is next for you? Because I know you got so much going on, but not only wrestling, you're doing a lot of stuff like streaming and other things.
Yeah, well, Mason and I stream on Twitch twice a week. Actually, I'm hopping on his stream right after we're done here twitch.tv/greatblackotaku. That's OTAKU. Or you can just look him up on Twitter or Zitter, whatever the fuck it is now. At Great Black Otaku. I'm on all socials as Suave Mansoor. We put out these really funny clips of us telling stories from our time in WWE. We have a TikTok account and an Instagram account called The Insiders TV, Insiders with a Z, where we tell all these great stories about our time and the crazy fucking shit that happened with us. On top of course, wrestling every single weekend for like half of this year. Next weekend, we're going to be in Tampa for the Royal Rumble weekend. We're wrestling for GCW two of those days. The weekend after that, we're flying to Poland for a show. We're going to be in Texas. I'm wrestling for Wrestling Revolver. We're going to be, doing a lot of stuff. I hesitate to say everything because I know not everything's been announced. But, yeah, we're busy, busy boys.
What is, like, a goal of yours coming up? Like, what do you want to do? Is there a place you want to wrestle? Is there a company you want to wrestle for? Like, what are some goals for you coming up?
Well, a lot of the promotions that I want to work for, I've set up working for them. We've got dates. Like, I've done a really, really, I'm happy with the amount of companies that I'm working for, with great teams, working with some amazing, amazing wrestlers. So I'm really excited about that. But, you know, there's always the desire to be on TV, right? Because you want to be able to tell stories in that serialized weekly format. And there's a lot of options now, which is great. But for me right now, I love being independent. I love knowing my schedule and making my schedule. And, another big thing is, of course, both Mace and I have the dream of wrestling in Japan. We really, really, really want to fly overseas and work there. We've both never been, you know, we're both, it's so nerdy to say, but we love anime, we love video games, and we love Japanese pro wrestling, so to experience that culture would be tremendous. That's definitely a goal right now. Another goal I would say was to win Tag Team Gold with Mace. Of course, that's something that we want to do. We want to take our Ultimo Dragon picture where we're holding all the belts. That's definitely on the bucket list.
That is awesome. Good luck to you guys. I know you guys are going to be booked everywhere. You don't really need any luck because you guys just seem to be on a roll. It's one of those things where you just seem to be, like I started off, like you guys are busier now than like we've seen you. You don't mean we'll see you on TV for 2 minutes. Now I see you guys everywhere, which is awesome.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. We're happy to be busy.
And Sora, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.